The following podcast is a presentation of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
All right, let's get started. So, let's see. We've got good numbers. So, it's my pleasure to introduce three alums and so one current student, but returning student. Who are going to share with you sort of their ideas about things that went well here, things that didn't go well, things that they found incredibly weird when they got here, things that the way our system differed from their systems. So each is going to talk for about 10 minutes, and then we're going to open it up for Q&A. So first we've got Garam from Syria. Then we have Basma from Egypt. Then we have Christian from Mexico, and then Xi from China. So I guess, why don't we start, Garam, with you?
Okay. Hello, everyone, and welcome to WCL. First thing I want to say to you that you are going to love this school. I mean, this was the first thing that absolutely shocked me. I was nervous coming here from a different country, you know, learning in a different language, meeting new people, but I love this school. And I'm going to tell you briefly about the system in Syria and how it differs from the system in the US. In Syria, we have three types of education. We have the regular education, which is public schools. It's run by the government, and it's very cheap. It's almost free. You only pay very little amount for fees and stamps. The second one is the private university, which is very expensive. And usually it is for students who did not get a good score at the high school. I don't want to make it sound very bad, but we go to high school to law school directly, unlike the US. And so the other type of education is the virtual university, which is an online education, and that is open for everyone. It used to be that if you are taking these types of classes, you cannot take the bar exam, so you cannot be practicing law. And so within the public university, we have three types of education. The first one is the regular one, which is you have to get a specific score at the high school in order for you to go to this type of school. And the second one is the parallel education. And this is for students who got a good score, but not enough. So usually it's like 1 point or 2 points below the score that you're supposed to get. And this is a little more expensive than the regular one. And then the third one is the Open University, which is for any person, basically. You don't have to get any specific score. You can just register and you have to pay a lot of money. So what is different from Syria than here? Now that the classes are all mandatory in Syria, and that is one thing that is a good advantage here, that you can choose your classes. If you don't like tax law, you don't have to take tax law. I had to take everything in Syria. So basically, you are a lawyer of everything, right? Excuse me. And each year, so we have 4 years of law school. Each year we have 6 to 7 classes. And then in the third year, we can choose 3 classes, and that's it. But then everything else is mandatory. And this is great because you can focus on something, you can specialize in something. Now I have to make it clear that this is the undergrad, this is not the master's degree, because I did not get a master's degree from Syria. So this is the bachelor's degree. For the attendance, we do not have mandatory attendance, and this is a little bit bad because if you are given the option not to come to class, you probably will not come to class at 9 in the morning. So it's great here that some classes are mandatory. Don't be so stressed. It's fine. Mm-hmm. It's good for you because one of the classes that I took here, the attendance was optional, and a lot of my friends did not attend the class because it's optional, and you're missing a lot. So come to class, please. Now, after we finish law school, we have to go to a practice for 2 years, and it's mandatory. You cannot finish law school and go directly to be a lawyer. Like, you can't just go to court. this thing is, I'm still trying to adjust to it here, because I know people here go to school for 3 years or 4 years, whatever, and then you go to court. For us, it's different. You have to practice for 2 years, and then you have to take the bar exam, which is an oral test, and then you have to write something and get it published, and then you become a lawyer. So it's really 6 years of law school and training. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the exams and how it's different from here. In Syria, the exams are all closed book exams. We do not have take-home exams. I never heard of it until I came here. And the thing is, do not feel that it's easy. I don't want to scare you, but it's a serious exam. Like, it's really serious. I remember the first take-home exam, I was like, yeah, sure, take-home exam. I can open the book, I can see the questions. But then when I started the exam, I was freaking out because I have no idea what to say. It's difficult. So don't take it slow. Like, if you have a take-home exam, just consider it as any type of other classes. Do not, you know, not study for that. And then because we have the legal system in Syria is a civil law system, we do not read cases at school. I probably read a summary of 50 cases in the 4 years of law school. This is something else that is very, very different. Reading a case is not an easy thing to do, you will see. But it's because the system is different. So if you come from a civil law system, you are going to read a lot of cases, I'm going to tell you from now. I mean, depending on the class that you are taking. So the exams in Syria are basically based on memorization and, of course, analysis. Some people tell me, oh, you just memorize and you go to the exam. Kind of, but you also have to analyze. It's not a first grade exam. It's difficult. The other thing was that shocked me was the grading system. I was very happy when I got my first A, because we don't get A's in Syria. No one gets A's, no matter how smart you are. The system is a percentage. So you get, the final score is a percentage, but the class is out of 100. Each class is out of 100 points. And so the highest, for an average class, the highest is maybe like 80. 80. And so the average will be about 60 to 65. Most of the students are around they get around that score. So I feel kind of, in a way, it's a little bit unfair that you study so hard and you know you fill out everything and then you don't get a 95. But here you can get it. I mean, if you study hard, if you just write very well, you will get an A. It's totally normal. So that was like, oh, I got an A, and people are like, calm down, it's normal. Now, the other thing is the culture is very different. In Syria, we have about 3,000 students every year coming to public university. So we have about 6 public universities in the whole country. So, you know, imagine 3,000 students. That's a lot of people in one class. And so we don't get to interact with the professors. We don't have question and answer. It's a lecture. And you look at people, and a lot of them are falling asleep or playing with their phones. So this is a very, very good chance for you to talk and say your opinion and discuss with the professor. It's a great, great chance to talk to someone who is knowledgeable about the topic. The other thing that shocked me is that here in the U.S. you can take classes as an LLM with the JDs. That never happens in Syria. Never. LLMs are, well, we don't really have LLMs. We have masters and then the bachelor's degree, and they're separate. They don't sit together in one class, which could be good in some ways if you think about it. One more thing. Oh, so I want to share a personal story with you. here in the U.S., you know, it's very normal that you get the professor's email and you can email him anytime. Can you explain this to me? And it's totally fine. So if you have 3,000 students in one class, it's impossible. So usually professors don't share their contact information with anyone, like no one. And so I had a class which was tax law, and we had two classes for tax law taught by two different professors, but it's the same subject, it's the same book, everything is the same, but the time is different because they want to give students who work an option to attend one of the other. So one professor had very few students for some reason, and I attended both. So he knows that I go to class every time, and you know, I keep up my reading, and so he gave me his phone number, and he asked me to remind him to bring specific materials for next class. And so I was the famous girl with the professor's contact information. You know, it was weird. So it's good that you can hear, talk to your professor anytime. We don't get to ask questions in Syria. If you have a question, you can wait until after the class. You can talk to the professor. Maybe he stays for 30 minutes for questions, but that's it. And imagine you're 3,000 students. A lot of people have questions. So take advantage of this. It's great. And so I will end up my presentation with some tips for you for school. I learned this from my experience. If you, no matter what, how your English is good, if you are reading something and you don't understand words, do not stop and translate each word. You are wasting time. And I did this. I have to admit that my first class was going very slow. I couldn't keep up my reading because I would stop at each word and translate it. Don't translate each word. Get the general idea. If you understand it in general, it's good. You don't need to understand each single word. You will get it at some point. So this is very, very important. And I mean, I wasted so much time doing this, looking up the each single word, so skip it. The other thing is, a lot of people are intimidated by JDs. Is that true? Yes?
Yeah, you're strong.
No? Jeez. Well, don't be scared of them, because I know it's difficult to talk in class not using your native language. It's very hard. I'm one of those that it's very difficult. But remember that you have the international experience that they don't have. And professors love that. They want to hear about your country. They want to hear about your experience. They know about the US. So please don't be scared of them. Speak in the class. You know, if someone is talking about something, raise your hand and say, in my country it's this, in this country it's that. It's very interesting. And that is the thing that I love about this school. I never met anyone from outside Syria. In the class when I was in Syria, everyone is Syrian. Everyone knows the same thing, right? So take advantage of it and just speak about your country, because people like it and the professor like it. So I will conclude this by saying that you are all smart. You are very brave to come to a different country, to meet different people, to be with people from different cultures, and to study in a different language. That's huge. You should be proud of yourselves. Good luck. Thank you.
Okay, hello. I am Basma from Egypt. I used to be one of the LLMs during the past year. I graduated in summer 2013. And I'm honored to know that I am one of the WCL alumni family. A year ago, I was just like you sitting in this place, listening to former colleagues who had gone through this experience, and so distracted, so worried, so I don't know what's going on a little bit, but actually I listened to my colleagues and that was really inspiring and very helpful. I hope we do the same this time. Well, actually I want just to set very generic rules in the beginning that basically it's all about your plans here. If you want to have fun, like till the end of the program, you're going to have fun like never before. If you want to study and educate yourself and get an amazing experience, you're going to have an amazing experience. If you want both, you're going to have both. So it's all about your plan. What are you planning for yourself during this program? The second thing is there is a real fact I always considered in my mind that definitely it's one of the best experiences that anyone would go through in his life. I believe that this is the best year I've ever been, and even though it was the first year abroad for me and just being here in America, taking care of myself, living by myself, and you know, taking care of every single detail in my life besides studying and taking my master's degree, I didn't feel bad. I've never had this feeling of being homesick or cultural shock or anything of that. Actually, everybody here is really understanding and amazing family. I always call the WCL family or the ILSP family as the family, my family. I had a big family actually from everywhere, like 100 person. Wow, this is amazing. So it's been such an amazing experience. I will never forget in my life. I wish I come back here. And every time I come back here, I feel like welcome. I feel like I'm coming back to my home, my old sister, Professor Kathy, and all my colleagues from everywhere in the world. It's been amazing. The other fact is, it's not gonna be so easy for you in the beginning. For some people who don't have enough professional experience and they are interested in business law, for example, they are gonna really have fun with the technical terms and English-American style of writing, which is not so easy, and the cases. The case law, which is completely different system than the legal system in most of our countries. I believe like about 70% of us come from civil law system. Is that correct? Right? Yeah. So it's kind of like the case law system is completely different, and it needs time for you to get used to it and how to read and analyze and know what to read and what to skip. And all the technical words, all the procedural terms that you read during the course are so confusing most of the time, but actually at the end of the semester and hopefully at the end of the year, you're going to feel like, wow, it's been so amazing. I know now the common law, you know, so I'm a civil law and common law person. That's cool. The thing is also, actually, I hear like pointed a few difficulties I had ever since I arrived, and actually I found like if they didn't disappear at the end of the year, actually somehow they diminished, and I would really like to mention them to you. The first is the writing, and in my country, actually the way of doing research is slightly different. We used to not to like put an issue, a problem, then argue the problem, and then find a solution at the end of the research, or not all of us did the same, actually. We used to explain a problem, and in a very dramatic way show you the details and what was going on, and then you can conclude what you want to conclude, actually. Find your own solution, your own way, you know? But it was like the way I got used to. Actually, when I came here, they are very strict about how you structure your paper. So you should have an issue, a topic, you describe the problem, then you find the argument, your own argument, what is the problem you find it's really important to take into your consideration, and then you should find a solution and speak out about this solution and give a conclusion at the end. So somehow it was tough for me in the beginning, but I think I did somehow good job, right? Okay, hopefully. The second thing is the reading and analysis of the case law. And as I mentioned before, they give you like a pattern to follow in order to know how to analyze a case. And for us, it was quite difficult. But at the end of the semester, you're going to feel more comfortable. At the end of the year, you're going to feel super comfortable. And it all depends on how you do, how you perform since the beginning. So if you do your best since the beginning and try to read more and more, experience like the whole thing from the beginning, so you fail in this time, and then you correct your mistake next time. At the end, I think it's going to be more comfortable for you to analyze a case, which is very good. The reading assignments and tons of reading sometimes, and you have to read it, and you think that I should read the 200 pages in order to be like very good and go to my class very ready, but actually it's not true. Actually, all you need is to, if you are so slow in the beginning and you are taking some topics that are so different and you don't know even anything about them sometimes, it's going to need like you to know how to control, how to manage your reading assignments. So if you have big reading assignment, you should try to know what it's talking about. And if you have, as Garam said, you just stopped at a very strange term, don't just go through it, like don't skip it. You don't have to read every single word and translate it in order to finish your reading, because that way you will not finish. The thing is also, you don't have to finish the 200 pages before you go to class, but know what the topic is. And one of the great advices I heard from one of our former colleagues, read the outline. If you know the outlines, right? No. The outlines are like the summary of the course. Sometimes you would usually find them with your former colleagues who have taken these courses before. So you go to them, ask them, give me the outline. Likely you're going to find like the same content. So you go before each class, read the summary of this class as much as you can, know about the topic, and it's going to be much easier for you during the class to understand what the professor is talking about. I think it really helps very much. The other thing is the JD class, as long as not all of you are so contaminated by this, I would say like some people feel really distracted by the JDs. And yeah, the JDs have their own policy in scaring people and making them look like idiots while they are just the same as you sometimes. But they have their own way of looking like so in control. Everything is perfect. I know everything. You know, they argue in a very stupid topic sometimes. And this is their policy, but don't be scared. It's absolutely fine. You are here because you know sometimes nothing about the issue. Try to do your best. Try to interact with the professor, feel confident. And as Garam said, always find a topic in your country that you can argue in the class. And it's really good. Professors really like to listen to such things. The final thing is the blue book. And the blue book is not so much fun, that's true. But it's not that scary. Some people are so scared. And I used to be scared in the beginning because everybody was talking about the blue book and the research paper and we're going to spend days blue booking, but it's not that way. Actually, there are a lot of people in the library who really help you and they are willing to do that. And actually, some professors really don't require the blue book for the research paper. So you're going to be lucky if you don't have this requirement in your research paper. But if you're not that lucky, you're not going to suffer because you always find someone to help you. So don't worry about it. So these are most of the problems that really were so hard. I hope I could help, like giving some advices about it. The thing is, I really like to mention is WCL is one of the most, the really special places here in the U.S. I heard of a lot of law schools, and they are really one of the top 10, for example. But actually, nobody helps you as much as people here help you, really. They understand really well who you are, your foreign culture, your cultural problems. They focus on that, and they have no problem. You can talk with them. You can complain. You can do whatever. They understand. Doesn't matter how you speak. Doesn't matter how good your language is. Doesn't really matter. All that matters is how we can help you, and they help you very well. So this is a very special thing. I heard this from other students from other schools. They were really impressed with how the WCL staff here help us, and I really appreciate it so much. And also the professors are so helpful, so friendly. You can't even imagine, like, sometimes the professor, like, says to you, don't call me professor. They feel shy when you call them professor. Say Bill, hey Bill, say well, you know, anything. Hey dude, it doesn't matter, you know. They are super friendly and super helpful, and I think it's good. This is encouraging. It helps you to learn more and know more about whatever you want to know. So take advantage of this, make good relations, and have fun with your colleagues. They are, I believe you look so amazing class. I hope you become family the way we were, and good luck for you for this year. I wish you all the best. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Christian. I'm from Mexico. I'm working currently in the Central Bank. I chose to come to the WCL because, well, they have an interesting program about international banking, international finance, and especially international law. It's like one of the strongest points of WCL. I was not sure what to expect when I come here. In Mexico, it's totally different the way you study. I was like, I have never left home, and I was like worried to left my parents and like all my friends, and I was not sure what to expect here. And I remember that I was so stressed the weeks before coming. I was like, oh, what should I read? What should I do? And one guy told me like, hey, first rule, don't be panic. You know, like, you are a lawyer. This is one of the rules that I have been following, like, all my days. Please don't be panic. Just live the moment, like, and try to be calm. We are lawyers, so you will have a lot of issues and a lot of pressure moments that you will have to be like, okay, like a doctor, no? If the doctor start to be panic, probably the his patient will die, you know, like, you have to be calm. I remember that my first day I came with Bill Chorma, and Bill Chorma, like, showed me around school and, like, tried to give me a view of the city. Like, well, I live in Foggy Bottom. He told me, like, oh, you should take the red line. I mean, the metro here is beautiful, like, in contrast with Mexico. And if you contrast with New York, I mean, it's beautiful. It's expensive, but it's beautiful. I thought that the language will be like a challenge for me. And, well, maybe the first month and a half, I think it was. I mean, I tried to put all my efforts in the first semester and the second semester. And I think when we were like going on during the semester, I started to don't be worried about that. I started to be like getting used to it. And all these piece like programs like very there is a lot of diversity, so you don't feel like a stranger. I was like Mexican. There was another Mexican. There was a guy from France. I mean, we start to be like as Mama said, it's like a family. Like, you start to make some connections. So don't worry about it. If maybe you miss right now your home, but I'm sure that when you will finish the program, you will be like, I don't want to this. And you know, like, I mean, DC is like, I choose also because I love DC. DC is, it's like a town. You have city, you have politicians, you have lawyers all around the city. And also you can have like phone, internet, you have everything. And it's not like New York, like always like very intense. It's like Mexico City, it's very intense, like, like that's why I'm saying relax, don't be in panic. I know there's a lot of readings. I was like also stressed about it, but I mean, you can have time for everything. I tried to go to all the activities the LLM board did the past semester and the other one. I mean, it's important to have both experience. You can schedule, like, if you work, like, during the day, you can read everything, do your homeworks, and then the night, going out, be with your friends. I mean, both experiences are very, very important. The networking, the famous networking. One of the things that I learned, I think the second week, it was networking. And trust me, it's networking here. I mean, the GPA for me is really important. I was in a scholarship, so I had to be like to get like 3.2 or 3.4. I get like 3.8, but it's really important, the jobs, taking account that, but also you have to be open to talk to anybody, even in a coffee, even in wherever you are, you never know who is sit next to you. So you have to be open to that, open to the culture. Don't make judgments because you don't know that person. Right now I'm working the Office of Mexico before the IDB, Inter-American Development Bank. How I get my internship, it was in a breakfast. I was helping the Mexican delegation in the spring meetings of the IMF and World Bank. And in a breakfast, I was talking with a girl, and she told me, oh, I was recently appointed like the director of Mexico before the IDB. I was like, oh, really? I just applied to the legal department, and I have an interview, we exchange cards, and I send like emails, like involving her in all my process. And then she told me, oh, well, why don't you work with me? I was like, seriously? Yes. I mean, also, it's like the way you are, you never know. You never know, so try to be open to all the people. Then, I mean, don't be panicked. That's my remarks, don't be panic. Well, the way here, talking more about studies, well, it's totally different the way you do like memos here than in Mexico. Even if I used to work to a global law firm called White & Case in Mexico, and we usually deal with US clients, but we didn't know how to do the memos that they require here. But interesting or not, is like when I was taking the New York bar last July, I remember a lot of Kathy Schenker. It's like the way she teach me to use the IRAC was the thing that helped me in the New York bar. It's like I learned so well that structure. I think that I went well in the essay part of the New York bar. Even if, I mean, the New York bar, they told you like, oh yeah, it's so hard, it's going to be like, no, it's not hard. You just need dedication and to memorize like the rules. But if you know how to write and the structure, you can always like, okay, you know, like you can know the rule barely, and then just apply the facts and try to do your best. I mean, you have small time to think about it. You I mean, in the MBE questions, That's the really hardest part in my, I ever take like 1 minute to choose the best answer. But you just have to do your best. There's nothing else you can do. But what you can do right now is to take advantage of this class that usually the JDs don't have it. A lot of JDs don't know how to write legal stuff. And they, and she's, and those hills teaching you this class, so take advantage of it. And also for American institutions, even, I don't know if Berenson is teaching you American institutions right now, well, take advantage of what he's teaching you. If you really focus on that, you will skip a lot of classes during the New York War. So, I mean, my suggestion is to do it. Manage your readings. I mean, I know it's a lot, but try to do your best. Try to do your own outline. I mean, it's good to take. There is a bank outline in the WCL page. You just put search outlines. It appears a lot of outlines. It's good to have one, but try to complete it with your own with your own notes, because usually, if you see like a lot of JDs is like, they're talking in class and you say, oh, how this guy, where does the guy get his notes? Well, what they do is like a summary of the key points, you know, like with bullet points. So you put your bullet points after the reading and it's easy to remember everything. So you can go out in the night and you arrive maybe 5 minutes before the class, read your bullet points and you will remember like everything, and you will talk in class, we participate, and the professors like that you ask questions. I mean, don't ask just for ask, you know, like ask questions like trying to give something, no? Because there were guys like just asking questions just to have the participation, and usually the professors know who are those guys, you know, like, so try to just talk when you have to do it. Oh, but that worked for me, so maybe for you also will work. And Blue Book, I think is important. Right now, I'm seeing papers. Well, I have seen papers from the Central Bank, from the IMF, from the IDB, and usually all the papers, after each paragraph, you have your citation. It's they are not so strict like the Blue Book rules, but if you learn the Blue Book rules, you will learn any type of citation. So I'm strongly like suggesting you like do that, you know, like. And if you are interested also to be part of the LLM board like next year, it is a good, very good opportunity. It's really fun. It's really fun to be part of the board, and it's other experience. And you are, it's like your other job. And try to do it, and try to go to all the activities. Try to talk to each other of you, like try to hang around all together. It's really, 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 really great. And try to go around DC. Try to take advantage right now that we have sun, and try to go in a bicycle, try to run, try to go to happy hours. I mean, try to, it's part of BDC. It's part of DC, really. Like, when I'm going out from work, they say, oh, let's go to a happy hour. You know, like, happy hour. Try to go. You know, like,
so many hours.
Yeah, try to do everything. Try to take advantage of this city. There's a lot of politicians. You never know, like, sitting in a bar, that's a lawmaker, he's a democratic, you know, like, it happens. So try to do that. In the winter, try to go skiing. I mean, some things that we don't have in Mexico, and I never skiing, snowboarding, or try to do it, you know, like, try to take advantage of this experience. I really grow personally, and also, academically, I learned, and I'm very grateful with WCL for all the tools that they provide me, and also to Gina, to to Melanie Jack, to everyone, Julie, talk with them. They will take you into line, and well, if you have questions, please just tell me. I'm always available. So, thank you.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Xi Liu from China. So it's my second semester in WCL. What about my specialization? In spring and summer, I studied international organizations, and this semester I start to learn some international trade and arbitration. And right now I'm working as a fellow in the Center on International Commercial Arbitration and do some promotion. They will have many events and panels in the October and November. They will be very interesting, and a lot of practitioners from all over the world will come to WCL and give lectures. I feel really pleasure to speak here because I don't have too much practical experience before I come here. I newly graduated from the Chinese law school and come here to my L, and really exposed to the foreign culture. It's my first time to study abroad and just feel, oh, I'm an alien, though I'm not from Mars. Okay, so so it's hard to say how to succeed in the law school, but hopefully, actually, I just keep making mistakes, keep getting trouble, and keep fixing it, keep trying to find the right person to help me to get out of the trouble. And I think that is how I can survive from the first semester. So at first, I should address the difference between the Chinese and U.S. legal education. So I can't say the legal system because I don't have too much practical experience. So I'll start from the difference between the law school. I found here, first from the professor, the professor from more broad background. Some of them maybe focus on academic research and study, and many of them have maybe federal government officials or other like the arbitrator in the international tribunal, so that they are really experienced and they're really pragmatic. So learn from them, you can learn more practical experience definitely, and they will more focus on the practical issues, not just theoretical like in China. Actually, what I learned in China, the international law is really theoretic. We just learn the convention, learn the definition, conception. Don't have too many cases and a lot of like terms, but here it's really focused on the practical litigation. You have to know how to apply this convention in the U.S. domestic legal system, or how to use it to resolve the problem of your client. So that is why I think it's very useful to learned here. And also the curriculum is quite different. You will never know how many credit I got from the Chinese undergraduate, because I do programs, so I have to study both foreign language and the law. I did more than like 200 credit in my undergraduate 4 years. It's so crazy. I just, in the morning I study like linguistic or English literature, and in the afternoon I study constitution or contract. Just so crazy, freak out between the two, and I was just attending class and open the book and listen to the lecture. Can't do too much reading and not really how to say, immerse into the legal study. So I feel really a great regret to do that. But here, because the academic climate, so your credit are limited to like 6 credit at most every semester, and this semester I just do 8 because I spend too much in the spring and summer. So it makes you really focus on your current study. And also, don't think that the credit is more, but you have to do a lot of reading. So I think maybe 1 course here equal to like 3 courses in China, and the readings are even more. So I think I do more readings this first semester than what I read in the Chinese law school. What's a shame. Okay, so and also the exam are quite different. Like my former colleagues say, in our country, in other civil law country, the exam are most closed books and maybe multiple choice or other questions. But most of them you have to memorize. So what we did before the taking exam, just try to cram all the definitions and put, and when you get a paper and try to wait when the memory is still fresh, just try to put an or in the paper, and after the exam, just forget everything. Just yeah, that is my experience in Chinese law school exam. But here, because it is open book, you have take home exam 8 hours, 24 hours, 48 hours. You have enough time, but it doesn't mean you can you can just easily to deal with that. It's really really challenging for me, especially in summer. I have 2 48-hour exam for the summer program, and at that time I was in Switzerland, and I really want to travel after the exam. So it's really really torture in that week after the program. I stay in Geneva in the very hot summer, stay there, try to finish the exam, and in 48 hours, and how to arrange your schedule, like start from what time, and because after that 48 hours, the system will close, and it will be really bad if you didn't submit your exam. So usually I will start from the from at noon or like 1 p.m. and like this, and to try to arrange my time, try to take the exam at a at the moment that I'm most energetic, like this, and sleep regularly. The 48 hours exam doesn't mean you don't need to sleep. You still sleep regularly. Just you really focus and you really use your energetic time to deal with that. So that is the exam part. And so now start from the very beginning. Start from the reading. I would like to share my experience how to do the reading before the class. I think reading is really important, because if you don't read, you don't even understand, because the language problem, you don't even understand what the conversation is talking about in the class. But if you are familiar with the material, though you have some English problem, you may understand, because it just similar things change a way to say. So keep reading as much as possible, though sometimes the reading load seems just extremely overwhelming. And also, I think it's worthwhile, because you're paying for that, right? You pay so expensive tuition in law school. If you don't read by yourself, you just read, rely on others' outline. It's just like you go into a restaurant and you order a lot of food, but you just watch and doesn't eat and eat your instant noodle. Because I think others' outline is just instant noodles. It's just paragraphs of some ideas, but if you don't really take the class, really understand the class and just read others' outlines, you can't understand. Outline maybe help before you take exam, but if you don't read the case, you just read the brief, it doesn't make sense and doesn't help you. And we all know that eat too much instant food is bad for health. So, yeah. So what I usually do is, before the reading, I'll take a look at the syllabus, see how many pages it will be. If it is a big reading, okay, any reading that more than 10 pages, I will at first figure out the structure, know which part is important, which part I should take close read, and which part I just need to skim, like the literature background, history, like this. I just skim and know the leading case, know what is the subject matter the professor will cover in the next class, and then I will locate to the really need to read, and maybe I will do some highlight on the casebook. I will write a brief beside it, or if I have enough time, I will type down the main point to be the very original of my outline. If I have enough time, I prefer to prepare the outline before class, because I find it's easier to refer, especially when you are called on by the professor. It's really easy to refer. So and also making your own outline, you more clear about the main point of the lecture. So when you're taking the note, you don't need to dictate everything. Though you maybe feel anxious, the JDC assign you why that guy taking typing so fast. But sometimes they were just testing their friend on Facebook. It doesn't take notes. So no worry about that. So I think what you need to do in class is try to understand the professor's rationale, how does he or she analyze the case, and how to apply the law. That is the core. Okay, so that is the taking the lecture, and also I will talk about the most challenging part, that is the seminar. I just talked with Casey and she said, don't scare you guys, but actually that is really fun because we will learn a lot from that seminar. Though at first I nearly want to drop that class, because I think after 2 hours lecture, then I will fully participate in the seminar and give my opinions, like attending a debate. How possible? It doesn't make sense. It hurt my grade. I don't do that. But finally, because it's end of the LN job, so I had to take that one. And it's really worthwhile. Because in the seminar, you are not only expected to do all the readings, you are also expected to bring your questions, your comment to the class, contribute with your colleagues. So in that seminar, international organization, law, UN, we just, in the whole semester, we cover a lot of areas, start from the international organization itself, and start from the diplomacy and this basic theory. Then we go to a lot of, this class, I think, covers several courses, other courses, like the international organization law, the international court systems, and even a lot of current issues all covered inside. And I think in this kind of class, the professor's role is just like the moderator in the panel, and the colleagues are just like the panelists. So you are actually not taught by the professor, you are taught by your peers. So fully prepare and take others' opinions is really, really important in this kind of class. And also we have to do that because the class participation is like 30%. So you have to fully prepare and at the first beginning, maybe you not get used to that and don't know how to say, but when you read the materials, try to take some note and maybe some sparkling point or some questions. At first I just start from this kind of question. So you say China is bad at this area, this record, then what's your solution? Do you have any recommendations on that? Like this, start from this kind of question, it'll be easier to start. Okay. So, but after that you cannot prepare all the questions definitely, so you need to be a very active listener. I find it's just like debate. Though I don't have too much practical experience, but I really like to debate. So in the debate competition, what we usually do is take note, both sides, you agree, you disagree. So to strengthen the point you agree and to defend yourself, then to attack the weak point you disagree and ask questions and keep following up that, try to figure it out. So after you get used to the seminar, you feel really excited and look forward to the next seminar. That is the class. Oh, also, I think when you do the readings, you have to keep checking the MyWCL and email, because some professors really like to update their syllabus, like Professor Orenko, they update her syllabus like 10 times in the semester. So I have to keep updating my outline with her. But I mean, she's really good at collecting the material and doing the research. From her syllabus, I learned a lot how to do research, but because she's really authoritative in that area, and she got all the research information in that area. So her syllabus actually just like a bibliography of that subject, learn a lot. So keep updating the information of the reading. Sometimes the professor will add some material, but hopefully sometimes she just merciful to wipe some reading, say, okay, next class we'll focus on this topic, so we just read this case thoroughly and discuss in the class. So it happens quite often in the seminar courses. And after the participation in the seminar, you have to write a paper, right? We have to write 2 papers to satisfy the master degree requirement. So how to write a good research paper? I think choosing a good topic is the most important start. I didn't do it quite good last semester because I don't have too many academic experience how to write a good research paper in China. So when I come here, I feel even confused how to write in US style. I start from a really broad topic like the South China Sea territorial conflict like this. It's too broad. It even can write a doctor dissertation. It's not a 25 pages, just seminar paper can cover. So I have dropped that one. Then I found another interesting topic from the news, like the special status of the Taiwanese diplomat in U.S. Legislation like this, but still doesn't work because I can't find too many authorities to support me. So finally, I choose one topic from the list, the top list professor provides about the dynamics or the relation between the UN Security Council and the International Criminal Court like this. And because at first I think it sucks to choose the topic from the professor's list, I need to create one more creative. But finally I found actually it's just a practice. The topic, the content sometimes is not important. The most important part is you're doing the research. I think what we learn from law school is more than from the class, is from the reading you do by yourself, the research you're writing for academic and academic paper and memo. This process is really important. So after choosing a right topic, you write a description to the professor and let her review it. If it passed, it's okay. You can start to do thoroughly research and get familiar with the literature on that area and try to limit your research scope and try to get a disease and try to write a paper, ask a question that you can answer in a 25 pages paper. So that is how to choose topic and how to do the research. And also the very important part is the citation. I did really bad last semester because I don't have enough time at that time. So my citation is not good. That is one reason I didn't get a very good grade for that paper. But from the comment from the professor, I found that the citation should be really specific. It's not like China, you can give a short citation, just adjust the book name and the author and the time maybe, or just make a reference list beside the essay. But here you need to follow the book, do the really fully citation. And what you can do is when you read an interesting article, you need to take note, keep record of all the information that will make your life easier. So I think write a good citation is not only to obey the honor code, it's also like make the reader, the professor, easier to read and easy to refer to. So it's a win-win policy, you will do that, I think. Okay. So if you are not familiar with the resources, you can ask help from many people, like if you want to research but you don't know how to use the database or you don't know start from where, you can just ask the librarian. I think, what's her full name? I'm not sure. I remember it's Bill. Bill, the librarian, is very familiar with international law.
Well, there's Bill Ryan.
Okay, Bill Ryan, he's really, really familiar with international law and he helped me a lot. Teach me how to use the databases purchased by the WCL and also teach me how to refer to the journal to find a good topic. So, and also when you're writing the syllabus or every step when you're writing, you can make appointment with Gina and she's also really, really helpful and really nice. She gives you a sense how to write a research paper. And examine your structure, keep axial, what's your disease. Yeah, it's really helpful. So I think we should take advantage of the resources of the WCL, either the books, the database, or the event, the panels. WCL is really strong in international law. So the event happens every week, so you can take the event that interests you, and I suggest more related to your current study, and you can get a trend of that subject in that area, and it will raise a lot of interest in the class. And also you can go to some outside event, though it's I don't too highly recommend because it wastes your time. So you take a look at the syllables and find it's really related to or really helpful for study and when to we go to it. I went to Georgetown and OAS and also State Department this place last semester. And when I remember when I went to Georgetown, I met the chief executor of the ICJD, and I came to him and I said, oh, I'm writing about you now. And yeah, he's so exciting and talk about his position. At that time, he executed the president of Sudan. So he was really exciting about that. So it's very interesting, and because you are in Washington D.C., can I say the most powerful city in the world? Okay, so you can open your mind, meet a lot of interesting people. The people you when go to a lot of places, the people, the places you used to read in a book, see in the TV, but now you can talk with them in person, and you can go to the place. That's really wonderful, and also just. Beside us, our colleagues, our peers, they are really wonderful. They are all and from different country, different background. Definitely not different from your home country, because maybe in your country it's quite close environment. Just your peers in the same age, at the same age, the same background. But here you may study with experienced lawyer, even a circuit judge. Many influential people, they are chosen to be Humphrey Fellow or Visiting Scholars, so you can learn a lot from them. And also, yeah, SJD or American JD, just make friends with them, you'll get a lot and just grow fast in this environment, in this very diverse environment. And that is my experience I want to share with you guys, hope it helps.
Okay, so one thing that everyone has been talking about here a little bit is outlines, which I know today in class we talked about the commercial outlines, like the nutshells, and we were saying how it's good to read those at times. The outlines that they're talking about, though, are outlines that are created by students for a particular class. So, like, we have two different sections of international law, right? One with Professor Goldman, one with Professor Orenlicker. The outlines for those two classes are going to be very different. Based on what Professor Goldman teaches versus what Professor Orenlicker teaches. So what they're saying is to find an outline for your particular class. So that class, the same professor. And I do find them useful. And so it is a question of going on the outline bank. It is a question of talking to people in the class, seeing who has an outline. When I was in law school, people would sort of hold on to their outlines. If you had a good outline, you didn't necessarily share it. Here, I think, especially amongst the LLMs, I think people are a little nicer. And so we'll generally give outlines to one another. But it is useful. But then also, as she was saying, it is important also to create your own outline. And so we'll be talking about that as we get closer to exams. It's generally something that people do as their way of studying for exams. But it's an overview of the entire course. So anyways, that is it. Thank you very much to everybody. That was wonderful. And let's open it up to questions. Yeah.
We can hear.
So basically, if you are a student here, it depends on the type of your visa. You have to file an extension for your visa, and for F1 visa, you have to file the OPT. It
I think you've talked about this on the orientation day, right? But it's very important because it extends your student visa from the end of your study here, like for 1 year after this, okay? So it's very important. So you guarantee that you're going to work here. So basically, you have to make sure that your visa requirements are satisfied, everything is going well, and you have your authorization card. And by the end of this year, you're going to have like sessions for that, and everything will be doing well. Don't worry about it for now. But it's very important. The employment thing, actually, it's always about your search and how you try to make contact with other professionals, with your professors, and try to search on the websites of the different associations, the different law firms you are interested in. Actually, both of us are interning now. I think you are. He's not interning anymore. I'm interning now. And luckily, I got a good a place to work for, but usually it's not that easy. You know, you have to start very early. And my advice to all of you is that you have to start searching for jobs as early as you can. And try, if you can, your schedule like enables you to do that, try to get internship during winter or now. It's not going to be a problem. If you do that, it's going to help you not only to raise your experience as a professional, but also your connections. It's very important. You have to have connections. Not all of the employment opportunities come through online applications. Never. It's not that easy. Usually it's all about your connections. So make connections, do search, and focus on the area that you want to work for, so you will like have your focus on your search. And you're going to search in every single institution that provides this kind of employment opportunity. So this is my advice for you. That's
well, and also I think each year you have a job fair in NYU, and usually the international legal studies is invited. Well, apply to that. Really, like, just apply. If you are interested in one particular law firm, try to arrange a meeting in the job fair before you arrive to New York. Like, before this process is open, try to manage that they select your resume and that they already know you. Because what I learned about the job fair is that I had an interview with Arnold and Porter, and I remember they interview, they ask you, but when they are really interested, they already like make a, it was already arranged that position. I mean, so try to talk before arriving to that job fair. Maybe they select you like for 10 law firms for an interview. Well, try to focus on two or three that you are really, really interested, depending on your interest. You know, like, and well, and also as Mama said, yes, it's networking, but also it's about your GPA. If you have a bad GPA during this, I mean, in the first semester you got like 2.8 or 2. I mean, that would not be seen very good in your resume, because a lot of people came like with 3.8, 2.9, 4. You know, like, try to do your best in the first semester and try to do this before your interview, and you will be fine. I mean, and also networking. It's I didn't believe it. You know, like, in Mexico, it's not like that.
Yeah.
That's why I explained, like, this was a really challenge to be open and to show that you, like, since before, you know, like, hey, I'm Christian. I used to work in the Central Bank. I specialize in banking, business. It's really strange. First, you say, hey, how are you? You know, like, but here you have, like, 30 seconds just to talk, and it's really hard. It was really hard, but I mean, you're going to get used to it. And well, and also about the papers, I forget, I didn't say it, but try to arrange your schedule maybe the next semester, so you don't have like two or three papers and two exams. I mean, if you have two papers, you are going to work like really, really, really hard during all semester. And also, with the exam. Last semester I have like 4 exams in a row and 1 paper. So it was like during the old semester I was doing my paper, doing my readings, but I didn't plan to have like 4 exams in a row. So try to be sure that to arrange your schedule for everything so you went well during the finals especially.
I want to add something, Jess. It's very important to stay in contact with Melania. She is the one who's going to help you search. And she's amazing, so friendly. You're going to feel like you're talking to your sister, so it's going to be like so much fun when you talk with her. And also, she's going to help you to have a good resume. It's very important. And the cover letters and all these required documents, they are very important. So keep working on your search. Try to intern as soon as possible. And always contact Melania and ask her for advice.
Just want to add one quick thing. What my colleagues said are very important. I just want to highlight something that is very, very important. Now, remember, you are in D.C. It's the international city, right? And so employers look for people with international experience. You are very important because you were educated in a different country. You had experience in a different country. That is extremely important. If you speak other languages, that's a big plus. So it's, yes, it's about the GPA, it's about everything, but also your experience. You have to show yourself, make sure your resume that is clear, that highlights all the important aspects that probably people here do not have. This is very important. Good luck.
Yes, you have to. I think it's good. It leaves good impression. And sometimes because it's like a kind of custom here, I guess, as I concluded, I don't know if I'm right or wrong. They got used to meet a lot of people, introduce themselves, but those who show that they were interested in you will leave impression in you as a person, you know. If, like, I go back, put yourself in his place, and you met 100 person, but only one person came back and say, hello, I'm so happy, I was so proud to talk to you. He will feel, oh, that was nice, you know? So it's good.
Let me add something. So when you meet a person for the first time in some event, and then you want to email the person, remind him where you met. You know, say, hello, I'm this person from this country, we met at this event at this time, and then whatever you want to say. But my other advice is, yes, send an email, but don't send an email every day.
That's sure.
Yeah, like send an email once. If they respond, great. If they don't respond, don't send. You know, hey, respond.
And don't send the resume unless he asks it to you. I mean,
just
send the email, like say, hey, I'm Christian. Nice to meet you. This is my contact. I would really appreciate if maybe later we have a coffee or. I mean, but don't send your resume. Don't be so aggressive unless he asks you, like, send me your resume, maybe we can talk. Okay, that's different, but try to that these people know you before you ask. You know, like, you cannot, it'll be, like, aggressive for, Well, I start after the graduation party, like 2 months. I studied for 2 months, but meanwhile I get married. I was like with my wedding and stuff. So it was a lot of, but I mean, when you start your program, I took the LLM bar exam. It's like specialized for LLMs, and they give you a schedule, like you follow it. You will find it's not. I mean, the content is totally different than anything you see. You know, like I study criminal law, contract, and now I know like traffic laws of New York. You know, like, but I'm seriously, I think it completes my studies of the master's degree. I study a JD in 2 months, no? So yes, it's a lot. It's a lot. That's not a question. But if you follow the schedule that they give you, you will be fine. They give you even this course. You have early exposures, so you start on March, around March, and you have like a small exposures to contracts, to criminal law, to constitutional law. So you get used to it, and then they give you a tutor, and you have your schedule. Like it starts from 9 to 10, something like that. Because they also tell you, like, you need to rest. I mean, there's some people that, well, I was not always on schedule because my wedding, so I was, like, starting at 8 and maybe finishing at 12. But, I mean, you have to do, like, it depends on you, but try to follow the schedule of that. And be calm. I mean, when you're in the exam, I was like, okay, I already study. I know kind of everything. I know how to do my memos. Just try to do your best. I mean, I'm not sure if I'm going to pass it on November.
You will.
I already passed the MPRE. That it's like one thing out of my mind, but I did my best in the exam, and just do it. And even if you don't pass, well, you have a second chance and a third chance. No worries, you know, like, but you will learn a lot. That's for sure. I mean.
So you have taken a course, right?
Excuse me?
You have taken a course?
Yes. I take a course. I mean, I couldn't do it like independent studies. I mean, for me, it was not an option, so.
For anyone who's interested in the bar, you have to take a course. Okay, well, I'm looking at the time, and I think our time is up. So thank you very much to our panelists.
Thank you.
And so now I think we're going to have a pizza lunch, which is Julie over there.
Right? Here you're going to eat a lot of pizza.
Okay. Yes, tons of pizza here. So the pizza is up there, so go help yourselves. Thank you.
Thank you. So hello, everyone, again. I hope that you feel re-energized and excited to talk about internships, jobs, networking, the United States professional etiquette, and to learn from our alumni who were really great to accept our invitation to join us here today. We actually had a nice segue in our previous session because you had a lot of questions related to networking, to elevator speech, to how do I go about finding internship and finding jobs in the United States. So this is the time and place where we will actually talk about that. I'm going to ask you, if you can, I know it's hard, not to pay attention to what's going on our screen, because we are really thankful and lucky to have two of our alumni today with us to present, but we will also have three alumni who will be Skyping in with us. So it is my absolutely great pleasure and honor to present to you today Jaime Farrant, who is the graduate of the International Legal Studies Program in 2002. He is also recipient of very prestigious award, Goldman Grossman Award, given to him last year in 2013. He is originally from Puerto Rico and is working as the executive director at IUDA. Also, it's my great pleasure and honor to present to you Miss Isabelita Sant'Agostino. She is also alumna of International Legal Studies Program. She graduated in 2012. She is presently working for the Organization of American States, Office of the Assistant Secretary General. Three people that will join us a little bit later are Maheta Molango, who is a practicing attorney in Spain, working for the Baker McKenzie office. He is alumni 2008 of the International Legal Studies Program. Uzair Karabik, who is alumni of 2012 from Turkey, and Catherine Cadiente, alumna of 2012, who will be speaking from Philippines. Uzir is a judge, administrative judge in Turkey, and Kath Kadiente is attorney for the Supreme Court in Philippines. So without further ado, I am inviting our two great guest speakers to actually share their experience, tips and advices. How do you succeed? Because they're obviously very successful professionals, and we are, again, very lucky and honored to have them in our alumni.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks to the International Legal Studies Program, and in particular to Melania, who invited me here. My name is Isabelita. I'm Italian and Peruvian. I'm an alumna, and I graduated in December 2012 with the LLM program in International Legal Studies. I came to the United States, to Washington, D.C., 3 years ago, 3 years and 8 months ago, and I'm currently working at the Organization of American States in the Office of the Assistant Secretary General. As some of you probably already know, the OAS is an international organization founded in 1948 for the purposes of regional solidarity and cooperation among its member states. The approach used by the organization is to effectively implement its essential purposes, and it's based on its main pillars: democracy, human rights, security, and development. It has 35 countries, member states of the Americas, and it has granted permanent observer status to 67 states, as well as to the European Union. So coming back to me, when I was still in law school in Italy, at the end of my last year and about to graduate, I was accepted for a 3 month internship at the OAS, precisely at the Inter-American Commission of Women. So I came to the US, but in order to graduate on time, while I was still on my internship, I went back to Italy for a few days to discuss my dissertation and graduate, and then I came back to DC to finish my internship. I remember I worked very hard during the internship, sometimes even during the weekends and for extra hours, but that was worth it. In fact, at the end of it, I was offered a job and then hired. While I was working at the Inter-American Commission of Women, I decided to continue my education with an LLM. I chose the LLM in International Legal Studies at Washington College of Law for several reasons. First, because of its specialization and rich program in gender and the law, the number and variety of courses in gender, which is something very rare to find in other schools and programs. Second, because of the human rights program, and in particular, because of the courses at the Academy of Human Rights and Humanitarian Law, which take place every year at the end of May and beginning of June, and which brings to DC the most important professors, human rights activists, and professionals from everywhere in the world. And finally, because of WCL's focus on the Inter-American System of Human Rights, which was and is still very relevant to me, since I work at the OAS, and an important part of my job is related to the Inter-American System of Human Rights. In fact, right now, the reform of the Inter-American System of Human Rights is one of the most, if not the most, discussed and important topic that is being faced by the OAS member states. I began my LLM at the end of August 2011. I graduated in December 2012 while working full-time. Sometimes I had difficulties at the beginning in understanding, for example, the idea that I couldn't use a code. So as I said, I graduated in Italy, which is a civil law system. And I was used to use a civil code, penal code, administrative code. And here, I couldn't refer to it while studying or analyzing a case. In fact, in addition to American legal institutions, I took a lot of courses on American law, like health law, family law, immigration law, sex-based discrimination. And in all of them, of course, we studied cases and referred to the precedent in order to establish and determine which standard to apply. I have to say that it took me a few classes to stop this subconscious fight I had with the matter of the precedent, but finally I was able to overcome it. Also, at the beginning, I was very scared that I was not going to make it because, as I said, I was working full-time, and I was afraid to take too many classes or not to be able to study and be enough prepared for the lessons. However, with effort and organization, I was able to optimize my time by working during the day, going to class in the evenings, and studying during the weekends and some nights during the week. And it actually worked. In fact, during the first and second semesters, I came to school 3-4 nights per week, always prepared and able to take, and in the end, I was able to take A or A minus in every class. And of course, I was able to do this also thanks to the flexibility and support of the professors, who, for example, knew I was coming to class after work, and sometimes I was late. And also thanks to the personnel of WCL. For example, I was able to research and use the library resources or to study at the library during the weekends and sometimes until 2 a.m. at night. So if some of you are part-time students who are thinking to take a part-time job in the school or somewhere else, I would reassure you that you have all the resources you need to do it and to obtain great results both at work and in school. There's also something else I would like to say in relation to this. Because I was working full-time and my office is 45 minutes by bus from here, I never really had the chance to attend conferences, meetings, lunches, or other events organized by the law school. I didn't even know that many people in school, since I came here only at 6 p.m. and just to attend the classes. And sometimes I didn't really feel like participating much in class because I was feeling tired. And this is something I regret. So here's my advice. I suggest you take advantage of all the resources, activities, and opportunities that WCL creates for its students. Try to interact as much as you can with your professors and other students. In addition to the conferences and other events, the school gives you the opportunity to work part-time with the professor or in the dean's office or other offices inside the school. Volunteer in the organization of events, and of course, take also the extra courses that are offered at WCL. Even during the summer, WCL offers you a lot of options. For example, during the summer of 2012, I took a course from the Academy on Human Rights and Humanitarian Law and another one from the Health Law and Policy Summer Institute. These are chances you should not miss. As I said, I completed my LLM in 3 semesters, working full-time from Monday to Friday, came home almost at midnight, exhausted, and during the weekends and studied. But I also went out with my boyfriend, I had friends, since I believe that having fun and socializing is also a very important part of our lives. So now that this tight and frenetic schedule that I had for more than 1 year is over, I realize that if we want to, we can do so many things and fill our days with a lot of activities and still be able to do everything we want. This is why I suggest you to be active, keep all your interests alive, and participate in as much activities as you can, including sport teams of WCL. After I was done with school, I can say that I was feeling a little bored. So now I'm practicing sports, enrolled in courses, activities, and in case you don't know it, WCL offers for the graduates the option to take courses for approximately $100. So the opportunities offered by this school are not only valuable from the academic point of view, but also from the personal and professional one. In fact, the more you participate in several activities, the more you socialize, meet people, students, and professors, and the more you create for yourself more opportunities in terms of friendship and career advancement. If you're looking for job opportunities in DC, here, DC is a city with a lot of openings. There are so many international organizations like the OAS. For example, at the OAS, the work environment is very young, and every semester there are young people coming from everywhere participating in our internship program. And some of them, like me, are hired at the end of the program. So I suggest you to apply for the internship program if you're interested at the OAS. As I was saying, in addition to international organizations, there are also NGOs, development banks, and DC is a very young and dynamic city where most of people are here just for a period of time. Also, as I was suggesting earlier, you really should be always in touch with WCL's career service, who are always happy to help you, for example, to connect with your employers or to prepare your resumes and cover letters. Also, meet new people even outside WCL and create good relationships with your professors, who later will also recommend you when you're applying for a job. This is a very good way, I think, to receive help, support, and advice for your professional career. For me, and I'm sure for a lot of you, it was very strange, especially during my first months in DC, to understand the concept of networking. I felt like I was being rude by going to talk to someone just because he or she was wearing a tag saying where he or she was working. And since I'm from Italy, this is still difficult for me now to approach someone and ask about job opportunities. In fact, in the U.S., the concept of networking is very transparent, while in Italy, for example, it exists, of course, but it's more hidden and behind the curtains. However, I just decided to accept it and understand that this is part of the U.S. culture, and since I am in this country now, I think it's good to be open and receptive to new and positive things this country can offer us. Also, I thought that I don't really lose anything just by asking. Especially during my first year, but also now, I try to go out to a lot of networking events, happy hours, parties, where I can meet a lot of people. I've seen, in fact, so many friends changing jobs and ascending, of course because of their capabilities, but also thanks to their contacts and the fact that they were in the right place at the right time. Finally, I would like to say that you're all very lucky to be in this school and in this city. Sometimes I face moments of cultural shock or confusion, and if you ever had the same feelings, I think it's normal. But I would suggest you to always be positive, enthusiastic, try to get the best from every situation, especially from this school, its personnel and the professors, who have always so much to offer and are so happy to do so. Thank you.
All right. Hello, can you hear me? All right. Well, good afternoon, and it's a pleasure to be here today. And as part of Melanija, I want to say, make sure I say your name right. Was sharing about my job at Ayuda, and just to underscore the importance of the relationships and the connections you make at WCL. Ayuda is a nonprofit agency that provides legal, social, and language services to low-income immigrants in the Washington, D.C. metro area. And the reason I bring it up is that I actually found out about the job and I applied for it through the WCL Career Services email list that if you don't get yet, you will be getting after you grab it, and people actually will hire you based on jobs that they post on that site. And not only did I find out about the job, but I actually hadn't updated my resume in a few years, and so I actually called the WCL Career Services office, and I asked, like, hey, I graduated in 2002. I graduated in May of 2002. I'm applying for this job. I saw on the email, can you take a look at my resume? And they took a look at my resume. They gave me a lot of good feedback. They gave me a lot of information to apply, you know, as part of the interview process. And then when I got the job, I called them up and said thank you, which is something, as Isabelita was saying, on the value of networking, not just meet people, but actually thank them when they do something very helpful for you. Because I remember I spoke with Ariana, and she actually, when I told her, like, you know, thank you, I got the job, and she said, no one actually tells us when they get a job. So you know, make sure you are always remembered when you are speaking with others. So I came to Washington, D.C. in January of 2001 to do my LLM studies here at American. I had a few goals, and I'm sure many of you have some goals and some reasons why you are all here at WCL. Mine were very simple. Well, I thought they were simple. I guess they weren't. But I wanted to work in international human rights law. I wanted to, you know, get my degree, and I actually wanted a job where I could be more than 1 year. And so because before coming to D.C., I had never been in a job for more than 1 year. So I thought that might be important to employers in the future. Maybe for many of you, you want to have a job when you finish your OPT. And which I learned about the existence of the OPTs from all my classmates. And that might be it. But, you know, think as you're here and as you're starting, for many of you, how many of you you just started in August? Raise your hand so I have a sense. Oh, wow, so almost everyone. So you are just starting here at WCL. So think, what are the goals that you want to achieve? I actually was offered an internship to do human rights work, an unpaid internship. I liked the idea of the internship, but I needed money. I actually, through another contact here at WCL, I was offered to interview at another job that was a paying job, and I was interested in trying to pursue my goals of doing international human rights, so that I actually turned down the opportunity to probably have had a paying job to pursue my unpaid internship, which then turned into a paid part-time job, and when I graduated into a job I did for 7 years. So I actually got to fulfill my job of having a job for more than 1 year. And so think about what do you want to do? Why did you come here to this great school, and you know, what do you want to get out of it? And you know, and as much as possible, pursue it, because dreams actually come true. And while you're at it, you can ask for a lot of money at it, because I did it. How important was networking to you? I've been asked to answer a few questions, and Isabelita touched on it. Networking is very important here in D.C., as you may have heard already. I didn't do much of it. I thought it was kind of fake and all kinds of bad things, so I didn't do a whole lot of it. However, I ended up working in different countries in Latin America where I didn't live and where I had to actually start offices there. And so I actually had to do a lot of networking when I started traveling. And then I started realizing I didn't build my network of contacts here in the States as much as I would have liked. I had a pretty big network around the world, but not here. My network was my WCL alumni and friends here. So make sure you are meeting people. Now I'm kind of on the side where people approach me as part of their networking goals. And so when you approach someone, you know, try to add something of value to the conversation. I get a lot of, wherever I go, I'll get like 50 LinkedIn requests. And I've never met the person. I don't know who they are. And frankly, I don't know how, you know, other people here at Career Services might give you other advice. But I don't think that helps you in any way. So make sure you provide quality in your interactions with people, even if it's brief, something for people to remember you. Even if it's not super formal, I like to laugh. So a good joke with me will... Yeah, I'll remember you if only for a good joke. So try, you know, make sure that when you're networking, you do that. I stayed in touch with a lot of my friends. WCL was very crucial for me in my worldview, I would say. You know, I was sitting here taking IVT with Professor Anderson, who I don't know if he's still here. He still is teaching here? Yeah. So I was here in taking IVT when a student ran into the room saying that someone had just attacked the World Trade Center. Every time, on every September 11, I actually think of my time at WCL, because I was sitting here in the fourth floor, and I don't remember, 402 maybe or 401. And so take advantage of that. I was always amazed by the quality of the students and the quality of conversations of topics from just all over the world and the value in that. And you know, to this day, I stay in touch with many, many people. I came here for my orientation. I made a friend here. We became roommates while at WCL. We lived at the Berkshire. Maybe some of you live there as well today. And we're actually still good friends to this day. As I was saying, I've gotten to work in many places around the world, and I've actually hired classmates of mine for different jobs. They've gone into private practice in their home countries, and if I don't know anyone, the first source I go to is who's a WCL graduate. So make sure you meet people, and then you can talk to them, because you never know in life when you're going to need someone from somewhere around the world. So, you know, for example, I helped set up an office for my job in Bolivia. And I had to hire a corporate lawyer who knew how to register a nonprofit corporation in Bolivia. So, well, who did I go to? You know, my classmate from WCL, who was from Bolivia. And so, you never know who are you sitting with here. And consequently, make sure you make good friendships with everyone, because you never know when they'll come in handy. I can also tell you from a job career perspective, it'll make you look very good to your employer when you're faced with a difficult task from some part of the world, and you go, I know how to solve this. I know how to fix this. And many times all you have to do is write an email to the listserv of WCL, and you've solved your query, and you'll actually look very good with your boss. So remember that. Take advantage of all the people you will be meeting here. Also, you know, make sure you network with professors here. I actually stayed in touch with several of my human rights professors here, and then a few years later, when I found myself living in Bolivia, I actually did a small consultancy for the university, helping recruit students for the Inter-American Moot Court. And so it's also a way to give back to the university and be in, you know, stay in touch with people here who deeply care about their work and who actually deeply care about everything you do. If you stay in contact with them, you know, I can generally say that those professors I've stayed in contact with are often excited to hear from me and to hear how I'm doing, and when I seek for their advice, they're always very prompt to give it. You not only get access to the professor, but you get access to the resources the university has from time to time. And when you're in the nonprofit world, like I've been, you know, my whole career, that actually comes very handy, because I might not have the staff or the resources to do, or the research to do something, and I can sometimes get it for free by tapping into the university, which is a big help. In terms of other career advice, in terms of networking, as I said, you know, make sure you have quality, and I would say something that has worked for me is make sure you find someone, at least one person who's, you know, hopefully much more senior than you and can give and try to follow their advice. I had a lot of friends that I talked to, like probably many of you, who talk to you for advice, but try to talk with someone who can give you some wisdom that they've earned on the road. I was fortunate enough to find one such person, and whenever I've had difficult situations in my career, he's been probably my biggest source of insight and perspective. And I probably wouldn't be here today if it weren't for this person who helped me. And so definitely try to find while you're here. And again, there's so many smart, competent, and passionate people that you'll meet here in DC that I'm sure you can find someone who will, you know, be willing to walk with you in your career as you are starting it now, or kind of taking a pause from it here while you're here at WCL. Make sure you tap into that. And so I think I covered everything I was asked to do. All I want to say is enjoy your time here at WCL. It's a wonderful school. The staff here are pretty amazing. The professors here are amazing. And you know, enjoy your year here or your year and a half here. I also did my LLM in a year and a half, like Isabelita, which in a way I was actually happy because I got to hang around here a semester more. And so thank you for the opportunity, and I wish you nothing but success as you are going about your daily chores here in WCL. Thank you.
It seems that we actually have our alumni ready to Skype in, so we'll continue with a few more presentations and then move to question and answers.
Hi, Kat. We actually cannot see you right now. Could you?
Oh, okay.
But we can definitely hear her.
Yeah.
Great.
Not anymore.
You can just try to hear it.
Can you see us?
Yes, I can see you.
Okay, it's fine that we can't see you. We can hear you perfectly, so that's great.
Okay.
So, hi, Kat. It's so nice to have you. I actually went through the part of the presentation when I said everyone's name, so they are aware that you are calling from Philippines,
And so without further ado, I would actually like you to have more time to talk about your experience while here at WCL. So.
Okay. Can you see me right now? Or is it okay if I can
go? We can't see you, but it's all right.
Okay. Okay. I can start right now, right?
Yes.
Okay, I just want to say good afternoon to everybody, to the present LLM students and to the faculty of WCL and personnel. It's an absolute pleasure to be here. I'm going to talk about professional networking and how one could possibly get the dream jobs of their lives from the United States. I was there as a Humphrey Fellow in September 2011. And I left the United States just this January 2013. I think the first thing that I did was to change my name. I used to use three names, and you have to take it seriously, I guess, if you're into this job searching, job hunting activity, and you want people to remember you, and you will need to have a brand. And usually the American professional culture will say that you have two names. You choose a first name that you like, and your last name. So I dropped my middle name, even if I like it very much. And I think that makes sense. People remember it much easier. And that was the first thing that I did. Second thing, I needed to bring down my resume. I used to have a 5-page resume. Now I only have a 2-pager. It's 1.5 page. And I had to go to career office, and I had to coordinate. I sent them soft copies of my resume, and I went there, I think, twice when I was in WC and I went to edit this resume. And they also took a look at my statement of interest and my offers, and it helps to see that your CV and your statement of interest are going to be read by people with fresh eyes, because they'd be able to pinpoint what is more or what's redundant and what's probably not necessary at this point in the application process. And after that, or before you even submit these resumes, the CVs and statements of interest, I would suggest that we sanitize our internet footprints. And I'm not just talking about fake. There are other footprints on the internet that might not be so much of help in the job search or in looking for that new job. So be quite careful, especially during and after the application process. And I think after, yes,
did
I?
No, go ahead.
And that's just the stage one. And what the most difficult part of this professional networking and job search is to whom to send these letters and statements of interest. And I quite exhausted so many options. I asked friends, old friends, new found friends, and have to make a lot of them. I asked my professors, your mentors in school, and since we are coming from different countries, for sure you have a network there from your own communities. They call it the little mafia in Washington, D.C. For me, I had to search for the so-called Filipino mafia, and there is so much of help. However, what really worked for me was going to the internet and look for a person I could send my resume to. I set one professional affiliation, one internship, but he said first because I wanted really to work for the world. So what I did, after 1 week of sending all these letters and CVs to just that I got from friends, I had to vote and decide at worldbank.org, because I thought this would give me the email addresses that I needed. And I looked for email addresses, and I found 10 or 12, and I just posed them. I looked at their positions, and I got those email addresses where I could see that they are chiefs of their divisions. Then I went to Google Images, and I went to YouTube, and I looked for possible matches to my credentials and to my professional experience. And I sent it to one person, the World Bank, 6 in the morning. At 6:30 in the morning, I got a reply. And it appeared that he knew of the chief of the division where my professional experience and educational background would fit, and it was through that I was able to get a job at the bank. For the interview, I think there are three separate questions. I've gone through two interviews in Washington, and I was trying to remember, but there are three questions that I remember, and I think you should be prepared at least to have good answers for these. They would always ask you first to tell them about yourself. So tell us about yourself, what do you do, what do you want to do? Secondly, they will ask you what's going to be your most valuable contribution to the organization. And that is very important, because if they can see that there is a match between you and their organization, it could be quite hard to let you go. And once you get accepted, so much different from my culture, Muslim culture here in the Philippines. They really come on time, they set deadlines, and they expect you to submit first and your output at a stated time or even earlier. Sometimes they really ask you to revise. These are don't be too hard on yourself. It's just something. Just keep on revising. Once you get an assignment, you don't know what to do with it, you can ask your boss. There, I found out that it's not fair to ask people and to tell them that we do not know this, you don't know how to do that, and you need more time. But I don't think it should be a habit. I think that would be it. There are many office courtesies that you might take for granted, but it's very important that you always treat people around you. They stand there talk to you, answer that question most of the times, all of the time. On Mondays, everybody will ask you, how was your weekend? And you always have a ready answer for that. It's just one way. I think it's just one way maybe of staying in the morning in the United States. And I left the U.S. in January, but they allowed them to work remote for 2 months. It's very important that when you leave an organization as well, I think you should find ways in order to keep in touch. I still email my chief counsel with and just tell them how you've been doing and how your experiences at that organization are helping you in your job, wherever you will be. After your Washington D.C. experience.
Kat, thank you so much. I don't want to cut you off. Do you want to say something else as well? We are.
Hello, Kat.
Yes, Greg.
Yes. Yeah. Kat, I didn't want to cut you off, but it's just when you're dealing with technology, you never know. So. I just learned that we won't be actually able to have three of you on a conference call, so I'm going to ask you to say and finish your presentation anytime you want, but once you are done, I think we're going to keep this session alive, and I'm going to invite students then to ask questions to Jaime, Zabilita, and you, and I hope that's fine with you.
Okay, sure. Mm-hmm. I just wish the best. You can make it the best year of your life, and I hope the coming years will be even better. Just do your best, and always believe that you have something to offer in an organization, especially if you know exactly what you went there for, and you know what you can contribute that probably other applicants would not be able to do as better as you do. Then just be very confident and hope for the best.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kat. We're now going to open it up for questions.
I want to thank again to Jaime Zapelita and Kat. They really have great presentations, and they shared so many useful tips and advices. So, but I'm sure that you have many more questions to ask. So the podium is yours, and then once we have two additional presenters, you can absolutely ask them questions as well. So we're going to keep this alive and lively.
Okay, thanks.
Any question about how do you really network? Because it seems to be that it doesn't come naturally to everyone. Any questions about how that to get that dream job at the World Bank? Yes, Kat graduated from International Legal Studies Program in 2012. At that time, he was also a Humphrey Fellow.
The question was, when did you start networking for internships?
I arrived in Washington July 31st, 2011. The moment I arrived in Washington, D.C., I started looking for Filipinos first who were at the bank. And they actually helped me. They gave me names, actually two names. But it always turned out that these offices were very difficult to penetrate. So I had to start looking for a second internship, and I got accepted for that internship until I found this person's email. And it was by maybe some luck, you can call it destiny if you want. And he was the one who responded and hooked me and linked me to the chief counsel that I work for at the bank. So you must start. You cannot lose time because it's a very competitive world in Washington. Everybody's good. Everybody would have sterling credentials, great personalities, and sometimes it's the proper network, the proper contact that will get you the job. Although there's no substitute for a brilliant and sterling resume. Still, you can't lose time. I don't think we have a lot of time to waste in Washington. I barely slept in Washington, D.C.
Thank you, Kat.
I have a question for all three speakers of ours. They all shared that they think that networking is extremely important. They didn't find that really being something that they're really familiar with and used to. So would you mind all sharing those small tips of advices? How did you overcome that feeling of being uncomfortable, actually shaking hands and going to meeting people? And also, my second question for all three speakers will be, what did you find the most interesting or the most different from the professional culture in your country? What is in the United States that surprised you when it comes to legal professional etiquette? And how did you overcome that feeling of not knowing and not understanding?
Okay,
Melania,
I'm going to answer the second question first. Because our first question wasn't so clear, then do you mind if I answer the second question first?
Of course, go ahead.
Hello?
Please go ahead, Kat.
Yeah, I think it's the merit system in the United States that really sets it apart from the other professional cultures that I've worked for. I'm sure everywhere people recognize abilities, but in the U.S. they won't ask you who your parents are or what's your net worth, etc. In my country, even if you're very, very good, they would look at your family name, and that's why we would have political dynasties and we'll have the same family names occupying the high positions in government. But there, it's your work, it's the quality of your work that will define you. And while there might still be politics, and you cannot remove that in any professional culture, if you show them it's what you can do that will be the basis of their recognition. And even if in my office I was the only female in the room, and I came from a developing country, my roommates were all men coming from first world countries, but at first I was intimidated, but when I realized that that they recognize you for what you can do and what you can contribute, that all the more encouraged me. So that was very inspiring, despite what others may say about the politics that goes around the bank and all the other, and probably all the other organizations everywhere. You get rewarded for doing your best.
Thank you, Kat.
Well, I didn't quite catch the first question. If you may rephrase or repeat it for me, please.
Sure, Kat. It's more about, because the United States style of networking might not be something that as international foreign trained attorney you are used to. How did you overcome that feeling of being fish out of water? How did you learn to behave in such expected way in the United States, legally, professionally expected way? What worked for you? Have you practiced your elevator speech in front of the mirror? Have you talked to your colleagues and tried to kind of get support from each other? Or?
Yeah, okay. I think I watched and learned from the most simple thing as riding a bus, that people don't sit together so closely, to ride in a metro, and you just learn by watching, and it's when you're new to a culture like the United States or any other culture, I think you just have to adapt and take all the best aspects of that culture, and without any prejudices or judgment, you try to assimilate yourself in that environment. It's wonderful to make friends with the JDs, your American classmates, and your LLM classes, because they can share a lot about their culture that you'll never learn from books. And also interacting with people in the library, and all the other friends that you will meet in Washington, D.C. Happy hours are not just for drinks, the drinking. You'll meet a lot of people who may open your eyes to an entirely new culture that may be different from your own, but it exists because it's a culture that works for a group of people, and we just have to enjoy an entire new world, an entirely new way of dealing with things, an entirely new way of doing your work. And when you leave the United States, you just take the best of this American professional culture.
Thank you, Kat. And I think our...
Okay, as for the first question, in my case, so when I came to the U.S., I have no family here. I didn't know anyone. I was doing the internship at the OAS. We were a big group of people, but I don't know. What I did was trying to meet people, professionals, who were already like staff or consultants inside the OAS. And then I think that the fact that I started meeting people came because of what I said. I didn't know anyone. I had no family here. So I just started going out. And I met a lot of people from the World Bank, the Inter-American Development Bank, IMF. And it just happened that I started creating a network. It started like in a kind of, like I was just having fun at the beginning. But right now, it's a network that I can refer to, and even the fact that I changed job. Before I was at the Inter-American Commission of Women, now I'm at the Office of the Assistant Secretary General. That change happened through a contact that I had, and just a position that was opened in that office, And they just called me and said, would you like to work here? And I said, yes, of course. So that's how it happened that I created my network. It's not just because I was looking for a job in that moment, because I was already interning somewhere, but it was because I was trying to build a kind of family in the U.S. Even though a lot of them are already gone, because people come and go all the time in D.C., but that's how it happened in my case. And what was the second question?
I remember you mentioned that you regret that you didn't have so much time to actually network. But how did you overcome the whole feeling of being kind of fish out of water? Because for many cultures, networking absolutely exists as exactly the way you actually explained, but it might take place in different form.
Yes, yes. What I said earlier is that while I was at WCL, I couldn't really, participate in as many activities as I wanted to. And the differences that I found, like as I said, from Italy compared to the U.S. is that, as Catherine was saying, in Italy, for example, your last name is really important. It is important. Also, there is a lot of hierarchy. So normally, older people get the best jobs. Young people are always seen as people who need to have, I don't know, when they're in their 40s, they probably get something good. Instead, in the U.S., it's not like that. And that gave me a lot of enthusiasm. That's what I liked a lot here. And also the fact that here, everything is more informal. In Italy, you have to behave in a certain way, talk in a certain way. Everything is a lot about appearance too. Instead here, people go more to the substance. If they are interested in you or when they meet you, they're more focused, I think, on who you are, what you're capable to do, instead of, I don't know, how you dress or whatever else. Or, I don't know, the way you talk, I think. So I think that the fact that here I was feeling a little bit more relaxed than in Italy, where everything is so strict in terms of social behavior, that gave me much more confidence and I was feeling a lot more comfortable. And even when I contacted people or looking for jobs or when I was trying to have career advancements, I was feeling a lot more comfortable in that, and I just went straight to the point. I sent really short emails just saying, we met here, saying something interesting about the person that I remember so that they could also remember me. And then when I went straight to the question, I would like to meet you for this, this, and that, and that's completely different from Italy, where you have to send really long emails saying a lot of nice things about the person, and everything is much more complicated. So
I think so when I came and started to reflect on when I moved here from Puerto Rico is a U.S. territory, but in many ways it's very different, and this is one of the ways in some way, and that we are Latino and that we're very personal. And I remember when I was practicing law in Puerto Rico, I had some clients that you had to spend the first 15 minutes of the meeting talking about baseball. And once you ended baseball, it was like they hit a switch and it went down to business. And when I came here to the States, I was shocked at how business meetings and things like that just started, like this is the start. And then once they ended, they would become more personable. But it started very dry, this is what we're here to do and this is what we're going to talk about. Then if we have time, we'll chit-chat about casual stuff. And so I was always kind of more, I grew up more on the trying to be personable and trying, and in that work culture. And I remember I went to a meeting once and a coworker asked me, who was very not like me, this coworker asked me what did you get out of this meeting? I was like, well, I got the person to like me more, because I think that's important. And this person told me, no, you need to go into a meeting thinking what do you want out of it? And so I started trying to incorporate that into my thoughts, especially with networking and meeting people, because I was like, well, I guess that's not a bad thing to think, what do I want out of it? What do I want? And so if you're going to an event, to a networking cocktail, which there are, you know, five a week in this town, you know, what do you want to get out of it? You know, do you want to maybe just meet five people? Do you want to tell three people about you? Do you want to get one job lead? Like, kind of have an idea in your head of what you would like to accomplish, and, you know, be flexible for whatever happens. But that was always something that struck with me. And now when I go to events, that's what I'm thinking, like, what do I want to get out of this meeting? Like, why am I going here? Is this a good use of my time? And what do I want out of it? And then I try to make sure I go out and do that. So I always think in that context. And then the second question was about, I can't remember, can you refresh me? It was differences in culture, and then what was the other one? Okay. So just start, you know, thinking like, what do you want to get out of things? Darth Vader is following me. Just think of in terms of what you want to achieve out of things, and then your contacts become more meaningful to you, and you put more importance into them. And you know, because a lot of times you go into these meetings and you shake hands, and that's all you do. And again, like, that's really nothing that people will remember you by. And in a town like this one, where there are so many events and there's a lot of smart, competent, capable people who are all looking for work, it seems, in some one way or another, you need to think of one thing that will sort of have people remember the interaction with you in one way or another. So think about what makes you special. Like, what do you have to offer? I think she said it well. Like, what do you have to offer? And what do I do that I like about me? And make sure that comes out when you interact with people. A resume is a resume. You know, it's just a piece of paper about you. But when you interact with people, you can really come out of the resume. And you can shine for the great person who you are. So take the time to actually show the world who are you, more than what's your, you know, where you worked the last 6 years.
Thank you so much, all three of you. I think we'll, Kath, thank you very much for checking in and for responses as well. Just due to the time differences and time obligations, right, to our two other speakers, we'll actually move on now and try to get in touch either with Moheta Molango from Spain, who is presently in Switzerland, or with Uzir Karabig from Turkey. We'll see that. Thank you, Kath.
Okay,
Manya.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Keep your questions for the next round, right? And we have two guest speakers, Jaime and Isabelita, are here to answer them all. And our speakers who will be checking in as well.
Go ahead. I actually wanted to say, if you have questions right now, let's continue the conversation.
How GPA might influence your job applications? What is your experience with that? Could be different, could be the same.
That does play a role, I would say, more than anything in where are you looking for work. And so, for example, in the legal work, if you want to be a Supreme Court Justice law clerk in the U.S., GPA and what school you went to will be very important. Otherwise, it really depends on the mix of your experience and the job. Obviously, the better the GPA, the better your grades, the better your chances, I would say. But that's not necessarily, you can do many of things. You know, you don't have to, here in the U.S., you actually don't have to put your GPA on a resume. And they'll actually tell you at career services all the things you could do to hide that. And so it's not as important. It depends. It's important depending where you. I mean, from my experience, it's important on where you are looking for work. If you're looking for like a big top law firm, it's really, you know, they'll make it more important. If that's not what you're interested in, it's less as important. And then otherwise, it's, yeah, it depends on where you're at. Because some places will look more at your experience than your GPA, or even then what do you have to offer. Maybe you have a skill set, or maybe you're well connected within a certain community, and that's what they're looking for. That's why they've been saying it. Show what's important, what you can bring, and then and make sure you read the job description and how you fit that. I would say more than anything.
So in my experience, in my case, I never really had to like say what my GPA was, and if I had to compare here to Italy again, in Italy you have to put your mark, your GPA on your resume, and that really determines in which law firm you're going to work at. Like, there is no discussion on that. Well, here I haven't really seen that much. Again, as he said, it maybe really depends also where do you want to work, but it's not as taxative as it is in some other places. So I sometimes I put my GPA, some others I don't. Of course, I don't know if you want to work somewhere where, I don't know, really a really ambitious place or a really super high law firm, or as you said, Supreme Court. Then I need to know also in which law school what law school you went to, and that really determines if they're going to hire you or not. But in general, I don't think that's really that important.
Thank you both so much. And I think we are already here with Uzir Karabik. Hi, Uzir. I'm not sure where that camera is actually pointed at.
It's funny to you.
Part of my face. That's fine. So, Uzir, thank you so much for checking in today. I already actually spoke about all of our guest speakers, so they do know you're calling from Turkey, that you are a judge, and that you graduated in 2012, and we're Humphrey Fellow at that time as well. So without further ado, we're absolutely happy to have you and to listen to your presentation.
Hello, can you hear me, Melania?
Yes,
we can all hear you.
Great, thank you very much for asking. Good afternoon, everybody. Sorry. Are we fine now?
Yes, please.
Yes, I'm not sure if you can hear me, but everyone is really excited to hear your story about success and your story about networking in the United States.
Okay, thanks. I want to say that it's really great to feel the ILSB atmosphere again. Frankly, I miss these days. These days were awesome. And before beginning, I wanted to congratulate you all for being selected for WCS ILSB program. It is really exceptional, and I'm sure it will provide you a lot of opportunities for your career development. And of course, having an LLM degree is an important step in your career trajectory, but there are other factors you need to take into consideration as well. And one of these factors is networking. I'm going to talk about a little bit networking today. And first of all, when you look at the issue of networking from the morality perspective, you may get confused a little bit. I mean, you may ask this question: how moral is it to meet with people for the purpose of having some sort of expectations from them? The answer is that networking is more about giving rather than taking. It's more about helping people. And do not consider networking as an indispensable requirement for the professional life. This type of thinking puts a lot of pressure on you, and the more you put pressure, the harder you can expand your network. Just say yourself this: it is just making friends and helping others. That's it. That is the core of networking. We live in a society, and we have to interact with people. So why not creating win-win situations by just offering more help to people? And talking about offering help, let me tell you how I was accepted to the World Bank. 2 years ago, I was a Humphrey Fellow at the WCL and doing my LLM at the same time. And back then, it was a requirement for me to find an institution to do my professional affiliation. I was looking for opportunities at the bank, but I had nobody at the bank to consult or to ask for some help. There was a 5-day conference organized by the legal department of the bank, and I sent them an email expressing my interest in attending this conference. I got an invitation. On the first day of the conference, during the coffee break, I employed one of the organizers of the event, and we had a nice conversation. I told him what I was doing, introduced myself, and he told me what he was doing. I learned that he was dealing with judicial reform processes of developing countries. I had experience in the area, in that area, and I offered my help. I told him that I could share Turkey's experiences, best practices, and challenges. And he liked the idea that we agreed to go into details later. And on the last day of the conference, we met again after talking about the judicial reform processes. I expressed my intention of having my professional affiliation at the bank, and in a week I started as a legal consultant. Let's talk about a little bit networking opportunities in the school. Throughout here, you see many announcements of events. Try to attend these events to the extent that your schedule allows. And meet with speakers. If you have experience in that area, try to be a speaker. Apart from that, WCL has great faculty members. They are very prominent in their areas. They take advantage of their knowledge and experience and motivation with them. It's going to be useful for your career. And of course, your classmates. Now, you may not be aware of the importance of networking among your classmates, but as a lawyer dealing with international law, you will need contacts from different countries in future. Another issue I want to talk to you about is do not consider yourselves students. You are done with your studentship when you graduated from college. You need to prepare yourself for the versus competition out there. The legal job market is getting tougher and tougher with each passing day. And you need to start professional and set up your priorities first. And of course, hanging out in Adams Morgan sounds more fun than attending a conference, but I don't think Adams Morgan has something useful for your career development. Put the professional activities in the first place. And book all the boring conferences, seminars, and receptions, and try to meet with people. And there will be always time for it, but don't worry about that. And I want to talk a little bit about the city as well. Washington, D.C. is a network paradise. You are surrounded by international organizations, NGOs, associations, foundations, and multinational law firms, embassies. You are lawyers, and almost every institution has some sort of legal department. Pick them up in accordance with your career plans and try to find ways to connect with them. In D.C., there are many professionals from different countries, and most of them are temporarily working for international organizations or NGOs, so their time is limited in D.C. They want to take advantage of this multicultural environment and meet as many people as possible to be able to enhance their professional network. So it will be a big loss for you if you don't take advantage of it. Be active. I mean, for example, go to your embassy and register your name and email to be able to get the notices of events in advance. Apart from that, you can do some pro bono work, which will help you to enhance your professional network. For instance, if you are fluent in Spanish, you can do some pro bono work that aims protecting the rights of immigrants from Latin America. And let me tell you another experience of mine in D.C. I attended a conference and I met with a federal judge. I introduced myself. I said that I was a Jew from Turkey, and he told me that he had been to Turkey a couple of times. And he invited me to another event organized for the Brazilian genocide prosecutors. And I attended that event as well. And everyone was speaking Portuguese. And I was being able to understand anything. Even the judge was speaking Portuguese. And I told myself, what I'm doing here? And anyhow, I had the opportunity of having a conversation with the judge again, this time in English. And I learned that he was very active in judicial exchange programs. And initiating such a program with Turkish judges came to my mind and asked him whether it's possible. His approach was positive. He introduced me to people who were in charge of organizing these kind of programs. And I met with them. I met with these people and got the approval from my ministry, and started preparations. Then, for the first time, a protocol was signed between Turkey and U.S. for a judicial exchange program. If I hadn't gone to that meeting, if I hadn't met with the judge, this program wouldn't have come through. And to sum up, your time there will definitely shape your future. Don't waste it. Take advantage of opportunities. It's all in your hands. Thank you guys for listening to me. By the way, I want to say a couple of words about Melania, who organized this event. We were 11 Harvard fellows 2 years ago at WCL, and Melania was our coordinator. She was not just a coordinator, she was just like a friend, she was just like one of us. And she was always there when we need her. And she is a real world professional and a great mentor. You guys are so lucky to have her as your career programs director. Thank you, Melania, for everything. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Uzair, for your kind words and for absolutely amazing presentation. Now we're going to open podium again for questions because, as you remember, we cannot have more than one speaker on a Skype. Any questions for Uzair or Jaime and Isabelita?
Well, I cannot understand because there's something with the quality of your sound.
Uzair, we're now just going to open the floor up for questions that any of our students may have for you.
Okay, great. Okay.
Any question?
Well, go ahead.
Well, I have questions for every speaker. Well, when you started working with before you were
if I actually share the question with Uzair first?
Actually, love Jaime and Isabelita to talk about what do you do as people who are hiring for the international organization, an NGO located in DC. And I'm going to move to the other microphone.
Okay. Can he hear me if I can speak here or here? So, who's
that's a
speak?
That's
the
a very good question. One thing that is different in the U.S. that I've learned that, and in many other countries in the world, is that the interview is your opportunity to sell yourself, to come out of the resume and sell your skills and your abilities and what you have to offer for the job. And so I've learned, you know, from colleagues here and from my experiences that in many places in the world, selling yourself in a job interview is seen in as maybe being arrogant and boastful, not here. And so, you know, you don't have to be arrogant, but you should be very comfortable telling people why should they hire you. And you shouldn't be surprised. For me, for example, I often ask people when I'm interviewing them, why should I hire you? And you should have a response to say why you should be hired. It's your opportunity. It's your closing argument. It's your point to make a statement about why you are different than all the other people who are applying. So I would say that's a big thing. Make sure you read your make sure you read the job description. In this day and age, there's no excuse to not knowing about the job you're applying for and for the agency or the business you're applying for. I get a lot of just very simple, like if you Google my name, you'll find I'm a male, and I get a lot of emails and resumes addressing me as female. And so it's a very easy thing to solve. So make sure you do the homework to find out about the organization, what their needs are, what they're doing, and how you can fit in, and then also just be confident in yourself and your skills and your abilities, and telling people what you have to offer.
So from my experience, when I was interviewed, I remember they asked me first, of course, what did you do, like who are you, etc. But you can find that also in the resume. But I think what's more important is when they ask you, what do you want to do? What are you going to bring to our organization? And why should you work with us? So something that also my boss reminds me sometimes is that she liked the fact that when she interviewed me, I was very clear on what I wanted, what I liked. I looked very confident. When she interviewed me, so I think that's an important thing. And something else I would also say is, from my experience where I work, is as Jaime said, you should know, should remember the job description. Sometimes it happens that you apply to 100 things and then they call you from one and you don't even remember what you applied for. So try to at least print a page of every job description to remember it, because it happened in my office that they interviewed some people and one of them couldn't remember what was the job description. And she was really good, but that was the reason why she wasn't hired, because she didn't look interested. If you're really interested, you know what job you applied for. You're not just applying randomly to everything. And something else that in my experience happened, for example, in relation to the interns in my office, which I normally select, is that I really like when they are when they show real interest, when they're persistent. It happened that once we didn't give the answers to a couple of them that we contacted on time, and one of them emailed me constantly saying I'm really interesting. He even sent another recommendation letter. So I feel like showing real interest and showing your enthusiasm is something really important too.
Uzair, I'm not sure if you can hear me when I use this mic. And have you been able to hear actually what Isabelita and Jaime were talking about?
Actually, I have no idea what's going on there. I can't hear, really.
That's all right.
Can you hear me better if I'm speaking from here?
Yeah.
Okay. Excellent. Let me just say what the question was. The question was, what usually employers are looking for to hear from you as a candidate during the interviews? So Jaime and Isabelita spoke from the point of view of an international organization, because Isabelita works for the Organization of American States, and Jaime is the executive director of very well-known human rights NGO, AYUDA, here in D.C. What I would like you maybe to answer and speak about is, what was your experience when you were interviewed at the World Bank for your professional affiliation, for your internship? Specifically, because it was slightly different. You kind of got to that offer, right? You got the offer based on your networking. right? So how it went, what kind of questions they had, or if you had a formal interview, if you didn't, I'm sure they kind of walked you through the offices and introduced you to the colleagues, right? What the colleagues were asking you and things like that.
Okay. First of all, they just want to whether you have the qualities they are looking for. It's very important for them. And the second of all, the self-confidence is of course very important. You need to help present yourself. It's all about individual marketing. You may have quality, but if you don't present your qualities in a proper manner, you have no chance then. And reliability is a third factor. And that's why you need to meet with the interviews with full of self-confidence and reliability. And you need to be prepared for the questions. For example, they may ask about your experience and your previous job and your intention or your motivation. And think about them in advance and prepare your answers. And that's it.
I'm going to ask you to kind of piggyback on this question. So I'm going to ask you, and then I'm going to ask Jaime and Isabelita to answer as well. What did you find to be the most challenging question? Is it related to your professional experience or is it related to you as a person? Because there are quite a few different types of questions that employers are usually asking. So what is your personal experience?
Yes, I think the most challenging question was they asked me that, what do you expect from us? It was a tough question. I wasn't expecting this, but I think I told Jessica the second time that I just want to take advantage of the past expertise. And my quality, my capability to take care of the bank's legal operations. And I answered like that, I don't know whether they like it or not.
Thank you.
So I think the most challenging was, well, first of all, when my boss asked me why should I choose you, and I told her why I thought I could fit for the position, and why I thought I could be an asset. Also because she told me, you're also studying, so the problem is that because I was studying, I had to leave. I couldn't stay late until late at work. And my boss is a person who works until very late. So I had to leave at 5:15 when I had to come to school. So I really had to find a very good explanation so that she could hire me, even though I wasn't even going to stay until the time she needed me to stay or until the time that everyone stays in my office. And then I think she also asked me a question like, how would you solve, she asked me some, like a kind of more substantive question related to my job, like how would you solve this situation or what kind of program would you implement like in relation to some human rights issues. And I don't know, I gave her my opinion, and so I don't know, I feel like you in some job interviews you probably should also read, like be substantially prepared, not just talk about yourself but know also the subject of the interview, because they might ask you something related to the topic or whatever they work on.
Hi, Mike. Can I actually twist that question for you, because you have been hiring for quite a few years as executive director and a leader of many NGO programs in Latin America. What is the favorite question that you like to ask candidates? And what is the one that is usually, that did you find that candidates have a trouble answering?
Question.
I think the most common one, why should I hire you? You know, often people like just really struggle answering that question. And for me personally, if I don't see you give me one good reason to hire you, I'll try to, you know, I'll look for someone else. That's fine. And so I always put a lot of value into that one, just because it's something that is not written in the resume. I also have started asking people, you know, what have, again, because it's I want to get out of the resume, so I'll ask them, you know, what have you learned in your last three professional years? And that way they, you know, I want to listen what they shared. And sometimes I remember I actually hired one person because of her answer. The interview went really badly, and when I asked her those two questions, that's the only reason I hired that person, because of the answer she gave me. And that would have never come out across in the, that never came in the resume, and it never came out in the interview. So be ready to ask those. You never know what will tickle an employer into hiring you. And then, you know, always be comfortable. I'll answer one, because it's, you know, maybe for many of you this is standard in your country, but one thing that I've been asked that is hard is handling questions that are illegal. Like, for example, I've been asked my age in job interviews here in the U.S. I've been asked if I'm married, if I'm single. That's completely illegal. You don't have to. I mean, you cannot put that on your resume. Let me put it that way. You can't put it here, and if someone asks you in a job, you don't have to answer that question, but make sure you've come up with a polite way of addressing it. You don't have to say, I'm 28 or I'm 23, but come up. But, you know, that maybe should remind you, like, oh, do I actually want to work here? If that's what they're, you know, because that's pretty standard. You can't ask that in the United States, period. And so make sure you can handle, think about a couple of those questions that are illegal, and then think of how can you answer them in a way that you come out well. And then the other thing I was going to say, some people will ask you if you've been fired, and make sure you have a good reason. If it's part of life, people get fired all you know, in jobs frequently, but make sure you have a good reason, explanation as to why that happened, that is not insulting of their supervisor, even if it is, because you know, say I ask you that, and I'm gonna be your supervisor. I want to also hear how you talk about your supervisor, and so make sure you can answer it, and not only leave it at that, but then what did you do afterwards? Like, how did you know, if they actually fired you for a good reason, did you go out and improve on that reason? So make sure you add that in always. Like, you know, make yourself show that you've learned from failure and that you've turned it into a strength in your career.
Thank you so much for really great answers. Thank you so much for great questions. It's unfortunately just because we have time constraints and we have additional session that has to take place now. With this, we will finish this wonderful presentation of Jaime, Isabelita, and Uzair. So I want to thank again to our great presenters.
To repeat that, because I'm sure Uzair will hear that. Uzair, thank you so much for your excellent presentation, for checking in with us today. I want to say thank you again so much, because I realize you haven't heard my answer via that mic, for your really kind notes about my way of working with Humphrey Fellows. It was absolutely great experience, amazing honor, and I'm really thankful for the opportunity to have you as part of my professional and private network as well. So thank you so much, and
thank
please
you.
Keep in touch.
Thank you, Melanie, and keep in touch. Take care.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Bye.
Thank you again for coming, and I ask you all to stay here, because our next session about ins and outs of the networking will take place here.
talk about networking.
I'm going to ask you just for a few more minutes of patience, right? Just enough so I can have a short PowerPoint up. I don't see it. It's saved, but I don't see it. Computer, because now laptop is on and I have presentation on computer actually. I do have a presentation already on a computer, but I realized they plugged in laptop.
Oh, I have no idea how to do that. Can you just put
it's my problem.
There is but here on the set?
This is not it. Okay. Let me call my team.
Yeah. That's not it.
But it's not. No, it's not doing anything.
Yeah.
We have another.
I'm just going to shut this down.
They apologize to me for saying to do something this way. Like that.
need this webcam anymore, right?
Yeah.
Is that projector supposed to be in someplace else?
Well, it could be, but I just don't know where.
Okay, so I'm gonna actually sit down because otherwise mic will not be working, and we don't want to have too many people next to the podium mic. So let's move forward because everyone is really tired. I know now you start wondering like about, oh my goodness, is my resume good looking? Is my cover letter okay? And it's not template? And do I know how to network? Or how do you network? And it's great that we heard from this great alumnus, but what do I do with that? So today the idea is to finish up the day with actually creating or exercising practical skills. How do you really network? Let me just say a few words about networking. You heard already a lot about that from our guest speakers, Jaime, Isabelita, Uzair, and I think they all made great points. Networking is not just a way to find a job and internship. It's actually a way to create a group of people that you do know, and you're connecting with people in order to get to know them, to help them, and to get help if it's necessary. I really like how Uzair, our guest speaker from Turkey, actually said, because it's not part of everyone's culture to really openly talk about networking, while the networking in this or that way really exists everywhere in each and every culture. Just again, as Isabelita pointed out, it exists in a different way. It's not so openly out there, and you don't openly talk about networking. It's something like undercurrent, right? You have friends, you have family, and they're all helping you out to get out there professionally and privately. But no one isn't really talking about that. Well, in the United States, the culture is different, and as we all remember, because I keep talking about that during our resume and cover letter workshops, there is no good or bad culture. They're just different cultures. Well, because professional culture is just one part of the national culture, in the United States, networking is something everyone is openly talking about. You're expected to do it. You're expected to broaden a group of friends that you have, and if you get lucky, because you treat them well, they will treat you well as well, and if they can, they will help you find that special and perfect internship or a job. I don't think so. We're going to have that PowerPoint anytime soon. So why do you network, right? So you network to get recognized, to talk about your skills, to share information about your goal.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to come in, and I'm sorry.
That's fine.
I'm going to interrupt for a second here. Who in this room has Berenson at 4 o'clock?
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
No, you're fine.
So here's the second question. Do we continue with this today, or do we redo elevator pitch and networking another day?
I am actually absolutely fine with doing it either way, because we are here to help you.
So if this doesn't really work for you, I'm happy to have handouts of this PowerPoint presentation and maybe have a session on networking and elevator speech for an hour and a half.
Yes.
Someday this works for all of you. Might be next Friday or whichever incoming Friday. I'm absolutely happy to do that if that works better for you.
I know it's been a long, tiring day. So, like, we certainly don't need to continue. The idea of today was to have you guys get up and start practicing elevator speeches.
To shake off, you know, that feeling of, like, I'm fish out of water. I have no idea how this is supposed to be. So instead of making it obligatory today, maybe we should make it more fun because it has been a really long day. How do you all feel about that?
Who wants to do it a different day? All right, we're doing it a different day.
Exactly. Watch for ILSP newsletter information. We are absolutely happy to do it any day that actually works for everyone. Make sense? Great. Have a great Berenson, Professor Berenson class and enjoy your weekend. And don't worry too much because networking should be fun, not worrisome, and we'll practice. Great.